Coming up, it's episode 16 of Breakfast with the Beats, and it's a sweet one. First, Mike and I go over baseball's most unbeatable records as we celebrate Salvador Perez's franchise-tying home run. And by we celebrating, I mean me. Then we go through our beat writer roundup, examining the status of the Padres, Zach Wheeler's Cy Young case, and Hunter Goodman's greatness. After that, Mike and I discuss the biggest injury in fantasy this year, baseball's most disappointing player, and the parallels between the White Sox and Dynasty Baseball. Finally, in our mental health moment, Mike and I talk about how willing and able we are when it comes to sticking with it and never giving up. All this and more on Breakfast with the Beats, which is part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. But first, a quick word.
Good afternoon, fantasy baseball friends and family. It's your old pal, Mike Carter. We are recording Breakfast with the Beats, but it's more like, I would say, maybe happy hour with the Beats, although there don't appear to be any adult beverages involved in the recording of the show right now. But we are coming to you Friday afternoon because I am up in Michigan on vacation with my family, and Dave, being the great human being that he is, agreed to record on Friday afternoon instead of Saturday morning, since tomorrow I'll be running around like a chicken with my head cut off, loading up the car and getting ready to head back down towards home. Dave, good afternoon. Happy Friday. It's nice to be a school teacher in summer with Friday off, isn't it?
You know what? It's very nice, and to have that option of when should we record? Do you want to do it tomorrow morning? You want to do it today? You want to do it later tonight? It's just, I'm not going to lie. It's actually, there's some nice benefits to being a teacher.
It's some nice flexibility. That's for sure. Yeah. And I would argue, though, that working in school, we earn that because a lot of people think that we get paid all year, but it's actually a 10-month position where your salary gets spread over 12 months. So you are not getting paid to sit at home and do nothing. You're actually planning for next year, which you'll be here before we know it again. My students will report back again in 2 weeks from Wednesday. So we're coming to the end of that time, and I actually worked all summer. I had a summer session this year with 5 weeks of summer session for our kids who have special needs, but I'm not complaining. I had a great week of vacation with the family. It's nice to be able to talk some ball with you, though, this afternoon and get away from the family for an hour.
I have most of my family's gone, too, so this is working out well for both of us.
Yeah, I'm going to have a little happy hour by myself after we're done, I think, recording. Maybe have an adult beverage. Maybe have some chips and some snacks. It'll be nice. Mm. Well, without further ado, let's get into it, Dave. And we talked a little bit offline about one of your favorite players. I think it's fair to say that Salvador Perez is one of your favorite players.
Absolutely.
He tied George Brett, who is one of my favorite players. When we talked about Mount Rushmore's last week, George Brett was on mine. He tied George Brett with the most home runs in franchise history for the Royals this past week. My question for you to start off the show today, what is a baseball record that is unbreakable to you?
So I have a few because there are so many records that I think could just, that will stand the test of time. The first one I have, Cy Young with 749 complete games.
It's absurd.
Yeah, it's so ridiculous, but in the best way possible. Ricky Henderson with 130 stolen bases in a season. Hmm.
That's an interesting one because I feel like that somebody could approach that, but 130 is a lot.
But could you imagine that in today?
No.
But for fantasy, you're done. You don't have to attract anyone else.
Well, and it wasn't like Ricky Henderson was one-dimensional either. I mean, the guy could do everything.
Yeah, he was a five-tool guy. And then the other one I have is, I don't think anyone will ever do it. It's Cal Ripken's 2,632 straight games played. I looked it up, and that would be like 16 and a quarter straight seasons.
Nobody's and Matt Olson's probably the closest, right? And was the closest. I don't even know if he's sat at all this year, but he's in the hundreds somewhere, not the thousands.
Yeah, so.
Those are good ones. Those are all good ones. It's funny. I went with Cy Young as well, but for a little bit different record, which was the 511 career wins. now, granted, for those of you who don't know, and most of you probably do, back then pitchers pitched the whole game no matter what, and they didn't throw like these guys throw today. We all know that, I think. But 511 wins is something that will never be eclipsed. And as a matter of fact, I'll take it two steps further than that. I don't think anybody will approach 300 wins again. And I think we might be far-fledged from guys even getting 200 wins just because of the way that pitcher longevity goes now. I mean, you're talking about Jacob DeGrom being the most, you know, dominant pitcher of his time when he was healthy, and he's at 100 career wins, and he's 37. Yeah. It's going to be really, really hard for somebody to get to any of those, I think. Shifting gears, Dave, let's get into our beat writer roundup. You know, we talk about beat writer stuff every week, and we are about 9-10 days away from the trade deadline. The trade deadline this year is August 3rd, which will be a really fun day, I think, for a lot of people. There's a lot of speculation about what different teams are doing. But the first article that we had today was by AJ Cassavell, and we were talking about the San Diego Padres, who we all know, you know, I think, well, I shouldn't say we all know. Many of us know that AJ Preller is well known for being a wheeler and dealer around the trade deadline, but is usually adding at all costs to the Padres. The Padres are kind of struggling to stay afloat in the National League West this year. And you found a really good article where he talked a little bit about Manny Machado and Fernando Tatis. What did you find in that article?
Yeah, so it was called Padres Stars Are All Reaching Top Form as Trade Deadline Looms. And basically it went over, it was written earlier in the week, and it talked about how the Padres have really turned a corner as of late. And this was before their recent slide. They've lost, I think, a couple games in a row. But it just talked about there were three major factors. One was that the superstars are beginning to look like superstars. So like, Tatis is starting to look like the Tatis that we know. Jackson Merrill's coming around. And Manny Machado, he's got 20-plus home runs as we speak. So the stars are really starting to come through. And it's been quite evident since about the middle of June. Machado, Jackson Merrill, Tatis, they're all hitting well above what they were earlier in the season. And it's really helping the team win now. So that was the one part that they talked about how the superstars are actually coming through. Mm-hmm. They also talked about how the past weekend, it kind of felt like a statement. It's that the team is playing with purpose. They're really trying to prove that they are better than what they've been doing. And with that comes AJ Preller trying to decide, should I trade? Should we sell? Mm-hmm. Should we buy? It's really, really tough for them right now because they're in a spot where they haven't been playing well, but now it's all coming together, which leads into the third part, which was complementary baseball. In the past, it was, you know, the offense did well for a game or a series, and then the pitching didn't, or the pitching did well, but they just couldn't hit. It's all starting to come together, and it really makes them a fascinating team right now. It's should they buy or should they sell? So if they do buy, I kind of think they need to get some pitching because right now their rotation of Michael King, Griffin Canning, Germán Márquez, JP Sears, and Walker Buehler, it's not going to do any sort of damage, even down the stretch, much less the playoffs.
Stinks.
They're in a really interesting they have really interesting decisions coming up because they're also aging. And they have really expensive contracts that are going to continue to grow over time, like Manny Machado and Xander Bogaerts. They're a small market team. So if they could sell them, I think that would be the best long-term move. But at the same time, seeing them all come together like this, it's really interesting to see where they could actually take it.
To your point, they are 50-53 on this beautiful Friday afternoon, but only four games out of the wild card spot. So it's conceivable that with a couple of good weeks, they could find themselves right in the thick of that. I think in AJ Preller's defense, though, signing guys like Walker Buehler and Germán Márquez were considered to be fifth starter options. They were hoping that they would have Joe Musgrove. They were hoping that they would have Nick Pivetta. Yeah. I think Pivetta's a little closer to return than Musgrove, correct?
I think so, but I both of those are probably more like September returns, if that.
Yeah, so they have a tough time there. Those guys get paid a lot of money to decide what they're going to do. My guess would be that they're going to move in and try to make some arrangements to get replenishment on the starting pitching there, because the lineup itself is actually quite good. Although there's been some talk as well that Mason Miller could be on the move for prospects again. We'll talk about him in a little bit, I guess, as well. But to your point, the Padres are always going to be that team that seems like they're going to be on the periphery, and they're going to be all in if Preller has his way. The fact that they're aging, I think, is a really good point that you made in terms of the idea that they have to kind of go for it now. They can't really wait for next year. And the fact that those guys underperformed all first half doesn't mean that they could not have an excellent second half and find themselves right in the thick of that race, although the Dodgers are running and hiding with the NL West at this point.
Yeah, I agree. I think they should go for it, especially because the teams in front of them in the wild card, like St. Louis, Miami, and Washington, you can make a case that they're all just pretenders contending right now. Like Miami's lost a lot in a row. St. Louis has had some heartbreaking losses, and Washington's still playing well, but all three of them are so much farther ahead than they really should have been. And you can make the case that they could probably make up some ground when those three teams maybe come back down to earth.
Dave, we're pretty good friends. So as we shift to the next article, I just want you to keep that in mind when I offer a fairly robust criticism of you on this next article. The next article was written by Todd Zalecki, who covers the Philadelphia Phillies. And the article was a really nice piece. I enjoyed reading it, but it's about Zach Wheeler. And when the preseason started and I was asking you questions about Wheeler, you were not a big fan of Zach Wheeler going into this season. Dave, I guess my question for you on that is, are you ready to eat crow now? Because it looks like he actually could be the Cy Young Award winner.
I've got a plate ready with a fork and a knife. I'm ready to eat it whenever it's made, because I was dead wrong. Like, but here's the thing. The operation from which he came back from, he shouldn't really have come back as well as he did, as quickly as he did, at his advanced age like he is. I don't understand it, but I'm willing to eat that crow, and I think it's arguably the best story in baseball going on right now. And the article here called "Wheeler Keeps Pitching Angry, Boosts Cy Young Resume with Gem Against the Dodgers." It's really just talking about how pissed off Wheeler is. I know he was upset that he didn't get to the All-Star game, and he even rejected being a replacement there. He's really just trying to get himself better and better, and he's actually working on striking out more batters than he has, and not even just in the past, but this season as well. He's working on that, and that's something to note even for fantasy as well, that there's a pitcher out there that really just wants to get those strikeouts. He could be the Cy Young winner, which would be, it would just blow my mind. My question to you is, who would you prefer rest of season, Zach Wheeler or Christopher Sanchez?
Ooh, that's a tough one, because I have Sanchez in a lot of places. You know, I was a big believer, and that's actually one of the few things that I've done this year that's paid off for my teams, was drafting Sanchez. But I think I'm on Team Wheeler for this one the rest of the way.
Yeah.
Wheeler is an experienced guy. He's obviously been in the league a long time. He's 36, but I love what we're seeing out of him as time goes on. You know, you pointed out, Dave, that he's really actively trying to go for strikeouts. And so just a couple of numbers on Wheeler here. In May, he threw 38 innings and had 34 strikeouts. In June, he threw 31 innings and had 34 strikeouts. But in July, he's pitched 24 innings and he's got 43 strikeouts, including nine in his last start right after the All-Star break, in which he went seven innings. I think I'm on Team Wheeler on this one, although Sanchez is also equally remarkable in a different way.
Yeah, I'm on Team Wheeler as well. I know earlier in the season we talked about how amazing Sanchez was with that streak, but I brought up then, and I'll bring it up now, his sinker is really not a good pitch, and he throws it a lot. He's got a .357 batting average against, and that's supported by a .322 xBA. And his home and road splits are so diverse. He's a 1.15 home ERA and a 4.97 road. That's like Coors-like almost. Reverse Coors-like. I don't know. I really like what Zach Wheeler's doing. I would take him over Sanchez. That's not a knock on Christopher Sanchez, but it's just it's more praising what Wheeler's been doing.
Well, the thing about with Sanchez is that, you know, he had that remarkable streak, and now that he's been human again, people are starting to think that maybe there's cracks there. And maybe there are. I think that you might be onto something there. I mean, they've both been remarkable. The Phillies are nowhere without both of those guys, obviously. But Sanchez has 151 strikeouts in 132 innings, which is just stupid when you think about it. But he's also had some trouble in the last couple of weeks against righties. And I think a lot of what you're talking about comes into play there. You know, this is a guy in Sanchez who really is a three-pitch pitcher. And against righties, he seems to have had trouble kind of committing with, you know, throwing the sinker versus throwing the changeup. There are wide variations in splits there, as you pointed out. So it'll be fun to watch down the stretch. I think I'm a little more on Team Wheeler, as you are here in pointing that out, than I would be on Team Sanchez. Although, if you want to offer them to me, boy, I'll tell you what, I'd be happy to take either one of them.
Good to know.
And then we have another article here from The Athletic that Sam Blum wrote about Hunter Goodman and what a great year Hunter Goodman has had. It's made him very desirable on the trade market. You hear his name being bandied about for teams that are looking for catchers, especially those dreaded New York Yankees who have gotten – nothing out of Austin Wells, essentially. Dave, what was that article about?
Yeah, so the article is called "A Rocky Who Hits Better Away from Coors Field: Why Hunter Goodman is Such a Coveted Trade Target." And basically just talked about how he has been outstanding on the road, more so than some of the all-time Rocky greats. Better than Todd Helton, Larry Walker, Nolan Arenado, and Matt Holliday. Here are his splits. He's a 233 home hitter with 13 home runs. He's 282 on the road with 18 home runs. Mm-hmm. So the article brings up the question of should they trade him? He's under control through 2029. He's arbitration eligible coming up, so he's not going to cost much over the next couple of years. Now, the team has been looking for foundational players that are foundational players who are genuine building blocks. They want to see who they can build a team around. Other teams, though, they may see that he's doing this on the road, not at Coors, and they might drool and they might just give the boatload of everything that they have just to acquire someone this good. If I were the Rockies, I would hold on because I think you can build around this guy. I think he's that damn good. Mm-hmm. But they're a team that has so many holes the problem is their biggest hole is their home ballpark. So no matter what pitching you get, it's not going to do as well as it should. So yeah, I would actually hold on to him and I would build around him.
I think they should hold on to him too. They have a bevy of outfielders and other guys that are not as good as what he is. You have to have some type of a cornerstone if you're going to be trying to rebuild there. And let's face it, that's what they should be doing. They've got a bunch of commodities there that they could move. Guys like Jake McCarthy come to mind, perhaps Mickey Moniak. But Goodman is the type of guy that you kind of want to build around. And I think that that's what they should do. I mean, he's got 31 home runs, and we're not even at the end of July yet, and he's playing the toughest position on the field. And he's decent at it. He's not a great catcher. He's not somebody that's going to make you forget some of the all-time greats defensively. But he's serviceable there and could do the job. The question you have to ask yourself is if the Yankees come calling and they want to offer you four top-notch prospects for Goodman and stick him behind home plate, you have to consider that as a general manager. That's part of your job. They should probably not be in a position where they are going to say no without being able to listen on guys. But I would agree with you. I think Goodman is a guy that you really want to be able to build around. And for fantasy purposes, you know, he could end up being catcher number one next year taken off the board. You know, and I know that's different from reality. From real baseball, but this is a guy that's put up a really fantastic season.
Can I just say something for a second here?
You can say whatever you'd like.
Well, almost everything I want to say. When it comes to a team like the Yankees offering, making all these trades and throwing out their prospects for Hunter Goodman, it's these homer trade ideas that I see that really kill me because I don't believe that the Yankees prospects are as good as advertised, and it comes with that Yankee tax. Yes. But the names being thrown around like Spencer Jones,
What's
he going to do? How is he going to turn the team around there? It's whenever a rich team or a high level team has a need, these fans come out and they say, well, let's go get this guy. Let's go get that guy. Just because you think you need something or you want something, it doesn't mean that the rest of the league is going to bow down and give you that player.
I totally agree with you. And I love that rant.
I just get sick and tired of seeing or reading things about we need this, this, and this. Let's go get this, this, and this. Well, it doesn't work that way. It's not a charity. They're not being donated to you. You got to actually go out and pay for it and earn it. And I don't see the Yankees having the assets needed to acquire someone as, I don't want to say generational as Hunter Goodman, but as good. He is a solid player at a really tough position that you could build a team around. And I don't see the Yankees having it.
Is it bad that I want them to trade for Goodman so that they would trade Austin Wells to the White Sox and give him a chance behind the plate? No, I totally agree with you. You know, the funny thing about that to me is try being in Chicago, and we have WSCR, which is 24-hour a day talk radio for sports, and the meatballs is what I always call them. You know that. I tell you that term all the time, you know. Some meatball will call in and be like, hey, I've been watching the White Sox for 55 years, and I got a trade for you. Let's trade William Bregola to the Padres for Mason Miller straight up. And it's like, are you crazy? Like, what is the matter with you? Like, you get this inflated sense of what guys are worth. And I have the same conversation with Cub fans here where, you know, they're in it, obviously, and they're talking about what they need to contend. They obviously need pitching. And they come up with these scenarios in which, well, we're going to go down to Texas and we'll get DeGrom. And then, you know, we're going to go over to Seattle and we're going to get, you know, George Kirby. No, you're not. You don't have the prospect capital to be able to do that. And these people are not going to lay down just because you come calling from the Cubs. They don't care. So please stop with the meatball trade offers. You know what's going to happen now? Is somebody listening to us this weekend is going to get back to us and offer us, like, ridiculous trades online just for fun to try to get our goat. You know what's going to happen, right? It's totally going to happen.
The trolls will come out, I know.
All right, Dave, with that rant over, let's take our first ad break of the show. All right, Dave, we're back. And I feel like I'm maybe grilling you a little bit today, and I don't mean to. I really do want to get your perspective on some of the things that we have going on. But recently, you posted a couple of polls on Twitter. And the first one was asking, you know, which player was the bigger injury risk in fantasy baseball this year? And that one was about Aaron Judge, who had an ADP of 2, and Garrett Crochet, who had an ADP of 14. Mm-hmm. And this comes with the full knowledge that both of us have that neither one of them might play again this season. Which injuries had the most impact in fantasy baseball this season? And you asked people to vote. Now, I'm going to go ahead and say that I voted for Aaron Judge. But I'm going to turn the floor over to you on that one with that poll.
It was tough for me. I didn't really have an answer myself. But there's two sides of the coin here. If you took Aaron Judge or, you know, arguably the best hitter in baseball, and he doesn't play for you, you're making up somehow on the waiver wire with, you know, you're picking up players that aren't going to hit. Or if you pick a pitcher like Crochet in the first round, he goes down. What's going to happen to you? Mm-hmm. It was a really tough call for me. And I took it as it all depends on how you draft, but I'm always a hitter first guy. Uh-huh. I will always take the hitter first. I can't remember a year where I've actually taken a pitcher in the first or second round. It is very tough to pick hitters up on the waiver wire, but really both of these players have been awful. And it's been a reminder for both of them, just what, you know, of their extensive injury histories. You know, both had seemingly done a good job of trying to eliminate those memories of all the injuries that they had. But this year, it was quite the reminder for both. I personally would have voted for Crochet. It's likely because, like I said, if you drafted a pitcher first, you probably weren't taking another pitcher late until later. In which case, you could have really ideally gone like Crochet and Framber, or Crochet and Pivetta, or even Crochet and Gausman. Like, where would you be right now if you had those two as your top starters?
Yeah, you'd be dead in the water.
Yeah, but with Judge, if you picked him early, you probably picked another hitter shortly afterwards. But I want to know why you would have picked why you picked Judge there.
I have Judge in my home league. It was the first time I've had him in a long time. It's an auction league, and I paid a bunch of money for him. Excuse me. $62 total for Aaron Judge in our home league draft. Didn't anticipate doing that. At the time, it felt like a good idea. To your point, one of the guys that I drafted fairly nearby him, and again, it was an auction, was Byron Buxton, and that's worked out pretty well. Yeah. But I also had Roman Anthony as a keeper in that league, so my two top outfielders were Anthony and Judge, and I've had both of them gone for a whole chunk of the season. And I just don't find a way on the waiver wire to reproduce what you miss from a guy like Judge, you know? Like, I can kind of Frankenstein it a little bit. You know, I've got some A.J. Ewing. I've got some Cole Carrick. I like the young guys that have some upside there. I have Willier Abreu, who's been fantastic. I've been really lucky to have him. But I just can't replicate that. And I find with pitching in those types of leagues, you can acquire it. You know, we can make trades and whatnot. Not having Judge has really, really hurt. I mean, I was anticipating a monster season from him, and I just don't have him, and I don't know when I'm going to have him again. He might not actually be back. And guess what? I'm in the playoff run there, but I'm not going to be able to keep him next year, not for the cost that he's going to have. So I got, you know, basically what, a 16% of a season from Judge and for $62. I would never have drafted Crochet in the top three ever.
You know, it's crazy. I actually had him as my number one pitcher this year. I actually liked him more than Skubal and Skeens. I don't know why. I just did.
No, it makes sense. We as fantasy players, we as people, we look at data a lot, but then we also become rabid when it comes to the idea of like what a guy could be, right? So you get a guy like Crochet who looks like he's just hitting his stride. He's pitching on a good team. You're anticipating that you're going to get 30 starts, but I also knew Crochet when he pitched for the White Sox and know that he is prone to injury and prone to things that are usage injuries, right? Like, and it's not his fault. I'm not trying to imply that it's anyone's fault, but I had him bumped down lower than those guys, a distant third in that situation. I actually had an opportunity to take him or Sanchez first, and I took Sanchez first, which looks to be lucky right now. But to your point, They're both fantastic players, but it really does depend on how you draft, I think, in that situation.
Yeah. I like what you said there, though, but you can pick up pitchers later, too. You could stream two starter weeks like that, and you can do that ahead of time, too. Yeah. I guess maybe the biggest thing is just how you handle FAB, and that's a whole other issue altogether. Mm-hmm. Because if you lose someone and you can't win a bid on someone, then you've got an empty roster space for another week and you've got to do it all over again. So,
well, I think so much depends on your league format too, right? You know, like my home league is a 12 team auction league among friends, and you can make trades and all those things. If you're playing in an NFBC type tournament and you lose a guy like Crochet, you know, you're going to be in trouble. There's only so much you can do fab wise to be able to kind of reclaim that in some way. Right.
Yeah.
And Dave, the other poll that you had as well, this one I enjoyed and was really reflective on. And you put it on Twitter a couple of days ago, and you asked, which of the following players has been this season's biggest disappointment? And you were careful to exclude players who've been injured for a significant amount of time, like what we just talked about with Crochet and Judge, and those with undefined return times. And the three choices that you gave people were Cal Raleigh, Vlad Guerrero Jr., and Kyle Tucker. Who did you choose in that one? This was a tough one for me.
Well, I had you in mind when I made this poll, and I'm sure you'll talk about this player soon. But for me, it was Cal Raleigh, and I guess technically because he was injured, maybe he shouldn't have counted for this, but he's played for more than half of the season. So I felt it was okay to keep him there. And the biggest thing for me was that he was going at ADP 18. And right now he's hitting 163 with 269 OBP and a 304 slug. That is for a guy who was almost AL MVP last year. That's just, it's preposterous. Maybe we should have seen it coming because I was looking today at the StatCast sliders and last year and this year, and really the chase and the whiff rates, they were just as bad last year as they are this year. So either he was lucky last year or he's incredibly unlucky this year, but he does struggle against fastballs, which is really weird to me. He's batting 148 against them this year. Last year, he was 254 and hit 39 home runs. It's a 208 BABIP, and in a two-catcher league, he might even be better on the bench than he is in the lineup for you. So for me, it's Cal Raleigh.
Yes, and Cal Raleigh has been a huge disappointment this year. Yeah. You did this on purpose. Because you know that I can't even be rational when I have this conversation about who the biggest disappointment is. It's Vlad for me. And, yeah. I've been really clear about this, and I'm willing to take any criticism that people have on it. I've never had Vlad. I've never had Raleigh. I've had Tucker before, and I'll never make the mistake again. There's something missing with these guys, and I don't know what it is exactly to put my finger on it. You know, I coach baseball. I watch a lot of baseball. They're phenomenal athletes. Boy, they have incredible skills and talents. But if you drafted Vlad Guerrero Jr. at the tail end of the first round, what you've gotten for your efforts this year is a 259 batting average with six home runs and seven stolen bases. Now, some people will say, well, the stolen bases, you know, that's a redeeming quality. That's not what I got Vlad Guerrero for when I'm paying that high premium price for him. I got him for batting average and I got him for home runs. I don't understand the allure of Vlad Guerrero Jr. where he goes in drafts ever. I just don't get it. If you paid a first round price for a guy who had 292 and hit 23 home runs, I would say you would be outraged. You need more than that from a guy that's going to be a first round pick. And this is one of the criticisms I have with fantasy baseball, is that we love to look at StatCast. I do it too. I do it all the time. I do it daily. Mm-hmm. And we look at Vlad's bat speed. You're like, oh my God, this guy's got a 93rd percentile bat speed. He's got a 91st percent strikeout percentage at 13.3%. He walks at a 10% clip. He's a good glove. What's the problem? Is it bad luck? Well, I look at it and I see a 7% barrel percentage. I see a guy who doesn't hit the ball as hard as what he should be hitting with a 76 mile per hour bat speed. And so the cry from me always comes down is that he's overrated. That's me as a baseball fan and also as a fantasy baseball player. You know, I just don't get the big deal about him. Never have.
I will say to your point, like if you look at the last 3 years, 2024, 30 home runs, 323. Outstanding.
Yeah, that's great.
Last year, 23 home runs, 292. It's slightly lower, but I get your point. It's not what you wanted. This year, six home runs, 259 batting average. We're looking at a cliff here. And I'm not saying it's going to keep going down even next year, but there is something missing, like you said. Even the barrel rate is going down every year. Yeah. The exit velocity is going down. I think this year it's his back. I think we'll find out after the season. He's been battling through something. I don't know what, but he's always been someone that we believed should be here, and it's just below, and it's just, we're always hoping that he reaches that level, and we just keep getting disappointed. And I mean, he's 27 this year. By this time, maybe next year, what he is this could be who he is. It's just a 25 to 30 home run guy. I mean, if you get the high batting average, I think it is worth close to being worth it, but I mean, what it is now is it's.
What's his contract? Do you know his contract off the top of your head?
Oh, he's signed for the next decade, I think.
At how much? Do you remember?
I'd have to look it up. Do you remember?
Yeah, I believe it's almost half a billion dollars.
Right. Well, I mean, per year, it's it was $500 million for 14 years, $500 million. So $30 million over the next.
His production is not worth $500 million, even in Canada. Okay. All right. I'm going to get off the Vlad bandwagon. I mean, you get to see him play a lot more than I do. And he's a phenomenal player. I don't get the big deal in fantasy baseball about him. There's so many other guys that I would rather have at that position than taking that chance on Vlad Guerrero. It reminds me of a comment that my dad used to make when I was a kid, and I'll clean it up because this is a family show. But my dad would sometimes say, well, you can poop in one hand and you can wish in the other and see which one fills up faster. I always thought that was pretty spot on. Shout out to my dad for that one. He used to say that to me all the time when I was a kid. And I think that's kind of what we do with some of these guys when it comes to our fantasy perspectives.
Yeah.
Dave, I also think you're picking on me with this last one that we have here too. Another one that we have, you know, the White Sox are, you know, my beloved team, my favorite team. I follow them religiously, as you know. And this past week, they lost Kyle Teal to a high ankle sprain. Looks like he's going to miss somewhere between 6 and 10 weeks, which effectively puts him out for the entire second half. And so there's been some talk, you know, with the White Sox being where they are. It's a bit of a surprise at this point, right? They're 54-47, a game and a half up over Cleveland in the American League Central. Kind of living on, I guess you would say, I don't want to say borrowed time because that implies that they're going to die off, but they're sort of living in this space where they've hit maybe a year earlier, maybe 2 years earlier than what anybody thought they were going to. And you found an article by a friend of the program, Scott Merkin, talking a little bit about how the White Sox might go around replacing Teal or if they should even replace him at all.
Yeah, so the article by Scott Merkin was more or less just talking about the injury and how it happened and what he's going to be going through. But at the end of the day, he's going to miss probably most of the rest of the season, which is such a huge hole for the White Sox because they were waiting for him to come back from the early season injury. Now they're going to have to wait even more, but they're a team that, like you said, they may have hit just a little bit early and, you know, with maybe a few small trades here and there to upgrade their pitching, they could have been a nice Cinderella story, but now there's another hole for them that kind of, it's not really part of the plan right now to trade away assets for a catcher. So I brought this up for us because I wanted to get your opinion on it. I wanted to know what you think because you're really in tune with the White Sox. You do writing for them. And I want to know what you would do. And then maybe we could, you know, turn it around to like parallels with Dynasty as well. It's like, do you go all in when you have the chance or do you stick to the plan? But with the White Sox, like, what would you do right now? Would you make a trade for an impact catcher? Because I know they're going to trade for someone. Would you go impact catcher, or would you go for a stopgap for whatever reason?
I think what the most likely scenario is for this team is that they go stopgap and that they try to make a couple of additions but without giving away any of their prized possessions. This is not a team that's going to go after Hunter Goodman and get Hunter Goodman. I don't see that being something that's on the docket for them. What I think is more doable for them is a situation like with Cincinnati, where maybe they get Tyler Stevenson and Brady Singer together as a package for a couple of minor leaguers and guys that have some prospect status. You know, Cincinnati's not going anywhere. They really are going to need somebody to help stabilize behind the plate. I mean, Drew Romo is a nice guy and everything. He's just not a very good baseball player. And Carroll, before he, you know, came back, was not really exactly torching AAA after he got sent down when Teal came back. And so I think they have to do something to address that. I could see a situation where, you know, maybe they fill a stopgap like Jonah Heim or somebody from Oakland. Oh my God, I said Oakland, from the Athletics. You know, a guy that might be superfluous. Now my son will say, hey dad, they should go get Shea Langeliers. That sounds like a great idea too. But then I explained to him this morning over coffee that, you know, what it would take to get a guy like Langoliers, and are you willing to pay that type of price? I think where they're at and the way that they're thinking about it, and I could be dead wrong on this, is that they'd like to augment to stay in the race. But I think you have to ask yourself a serious question if you're Chris Getz, which is this team constructed to be able to win the World Series? And I would say no. I would say the answer to that is no. Now, the American League is a weak league. We know that. Mm-hmm. Could they make a run in the playoffs if they got some better starting pitching? Yes. Are they going to pony up and be willing to pay Los Angeles for Reed Detmers? I don't think so. Like, I just don't see that being the thing. Like, they're anticipating that guys like Noah Schultz and Davis Martin are going to continue to grow. They're anticipating that those guys are going to stay there. Obviously, Burke has been fantastic for them. Yeah. Over the course of the last few weeks, and is showing signs of kind of being that burgeoning ace that they've been missing. To me, I think it makes more sense to augment with guys that are going to be free agents at the end of the year that you're not sure you'd want to bring back. And then when you get to the winter, see where you end up. You know, see if you win the division. See if you make the playoffs. It's all gravy at that point. And then if you decide in the offseason that you want to go out and spend some money, there's going to be a couple of pitchers out there that people might know of that might be ace available type guys. If you really feel like you're an ace away from competing, then sign Scooble. There's a number of ways that you can go about doing things. And I think that Getz will be aggressive just because of the fact that he's sort of playing with house money right now. But I don't see them going after and doing something like, you know, getting Mason Miller. Although I could be dead wrong on that. I mean, maybe the price isn't as high as what I think it is. But I think of it in terms of, you know, look at, What if you're the general manager, what do you think they need to do to be able to improve? Like, does getting Mason Miller increase your chance of winning the World Series? Well, here's the problem. You still got to get the ball to Mason Miller to be able to make that happen. So you could have a bullpen where you have Grant Taylor and you've got Mason Miller, and that looks pretty good on paper. But in the third playoff game or fourth playoff game, you know, you're pitching Fetty or you're pitching Anthony Kay. They're fine pitchers. I have no problem with those guys pitching. But in the playoffs, you know, you need three horses, and I don't know that the Sox have that.
And the problem is right now, there aren't that many teams that are selling. And as such, the bidding, there might be a bidding war. Like, everyone always wants pitching. And
sure,
arguably the best pitchers right now available, other than Scooble, are Soriano and Detmers in LA. And if, you know, half the league is going after them, and the White Sox don't want to give up part of their big future, what's the reality? Like, you're not going to get those players because other teams will bid or overbid to get them. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with catchers. There's a lot of teams that need a catcher right now. And there are some really good ones on the market, like Langoliers, apparently, or Hunter Goodman. But if you're not willing to give up your major assets for the future, you're not going to be able to upgrade the way that, you know, the fan base wants. So question to pivot from this, like, when you play in Dynasty and Fantasy, do you go all in every year or do you stick to the process?
Generally, I only play in one Dynasty league and it's really hard to trade in that one. That's the one I told you about. That's got the 60 man rosters, where I've been like, I've had Nassim Nunez for years and all of a sudden, like, he's okay. it's just kind of been luck of the draw. I'm in the middle of the pack on that one, but I'm not a big believer in playing for next year. I'm a big believer in playing to win right now because I don't know how long these leagues are going to last, and so I don't anticipate that I'll be 60 and playing in the same leagues. I anticipate that those are going to go away for the most part, so I'm always trying to play to win. How about you?
I'm actually more of a safe player. I do try and remember what my long-term goal was. And, you know, I'll look at my assets and see, okay, if I trade this guy, then I won't have him next year. Is it worth, you know, giving up a year and a bit for 6 weeks? If I don't make it, if I don't win, is it worth it? Mm-hmm. I find myself more of a conservative player. And I think that's actually my downfall. I'm thinking about my two dynasty leagues that I'm in, and I've won a combined one title in both of them, but I'm usually in the middle or upper to middle pack. Knock on wood, it happens again. But I find that I'm always better than average, but I never, or rarely actually, ever take that step and win a title. And I don't know if that's because I'm too conservative or if because I go all out sometimes. I've been burned in the past when I've tried. Like I traded away a rookie junior Caminero for a win now piece. Yeah, the year just before last season. So I've been burned, and I don't know if that has an impact on my decisions, you know, trying not to give up on a player too soon. But I do find that I'm usually, like I said, just above average or close to the top, but I never actually, you know, reach that title.
You know what we should do next year? We should co-manage a team and talk about it on the show, because it might be interesting for people to listen to different perspectives about how we go about not only building a team, but then also managing it during the year. Like, something to think about. I think we'd probably do really well together, because I think we offset each other nicely.
Yeah, because you would push me to make the decisions I don't want to make, and I would maybe stop you from making other decisions that you didn't want to make, right?
That's a really nice way. See, it's because you're Canadian and so kind. It's a really nice way of criticizing me without sounding like you're criticizing me. I love it.
And I put myself first there, if you notice. I said you would help me first. I made that the most important part of this partnership.
Oh, Dave. You are a gem. That is really funny. Actually, that's the best laugh I've had all week. I love that. Oh, man. That's a really good one. just to kind of tie up our White Sox talk, you had also shared in our sheet a prospective trade for the White Sox to make, a mock trade that was posted by Jacob Tomey on Twitter, and that it was the White Sox dealing with the Cardinals and getting veteran redhead Dustin May and catcher Jimmy Crooks, while having to surrender William Bergola, Mason Adams, Drew Baker, and Tyler Gilbert. The idea being that the White Sox get a middle of the rotation kind of starter and a, you know, a fun catching option while giving up some prospects.
I got a few trades here that are just, it's just another example of homer teams trying to get as much as they could. Although this one was by FanDuel for Shea Langeliers, giving up Hagen Smith and Billy Carlson and Corey Lee. I don't know if the Athletics do that, but it's just one example after another. Like the White Sox receiving Logan Webb. Like, do they not understand? By the way, it's a fun bad Sox. So this is a Chicago fan doing it.
Right.
You don't understand what you have to give up to get a guy like Logan Webb.
Yeah, that's the best part of it.
That he listed there. It's not even close.
Well, he was like he also wants to get Heliot Ramos from that too.
Oh yeah,
that trade Roman. For Carlson, Hagen Smith, Javier Magallon, and Blake Larson. That is a no, guy. That's a no.
Yeah,
San Francisco and Buster Posey aren't just going to give you Logan Webb for a couple prospects now. Carlson and Smith are decent prospects, but those other guys would be flyers. You know what I mean? Like, and then his rationale was, you know, Sox get a frontline starter and add depth to the outfield.
Yeah.
No, that's not.
So to tie it all up in fantasy, understand what your opponent that you're trading with needs and try and figure out if the roles were reversed, would you say yes to what you're being offered? And if the answer is no, don't even send it out because you might burn some bridges.
Correct. Exactly right. So spot on, Dave. With that, let's take it to our last ad break and then come back with our mental health minute. All right, Dave, we're back. We had a couple of good laughs on this show. I'm still on in vacation mode. You're at home getting ready to do your Friday chores and make dinner and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
And we wanted to talk a little bit about our mental health moment before we break out of here for the night. And the question that we posed this week is one that's it's a tough question for a lot of people to answer. And I find it to be really difficult for a lot of men. And that's the reason why we asked the question here is how well do you stick with something when it becomes difficult? Do you continue to try and get better or do you give up right away? And this is a really tough one, I think, just because of the fact that we're kind of trained in the modern world, I feel, as humans, that if you don't get something right away, it's okay to give it up and try something different. Or, you know, if you can't fix something right away, you can just get rid of it and move on to the next thing. And I think about that in terms of relationships between people. You know, you hear lots of stories about divorces happening and people breaking up. And sometimes that's fine. I'm not here to judge that. But I think a lot of times people throw in the towel on things before they've really given it a chance. And so I wanted to ask you, where do you fall in that debate? Like, how well do you stick with something when it becomes really hard for you?
For me, this is something that's actually pretty challenging, simply because if I can envision it in my head, I'll stick with it. Mm-hmm. But I always, ahead of time, whenever I'm trying something, if I can't see it happening or if I can't understand it, I tend to give up and I shut down. And I'll be honest, when it comes to things like tools or, you know, like things around the house, I'm terrible with it. Like, beyond terrible. And it's not something that I'm really going out of my way to try and fix, to be honest. Mm-hmm. It's just, I can't envision it. I can't picture myself, you know, building something or fixing something. I just can't see it. And I don't understand it at times too. There are some mm-hmm. things I just don't understand. And when stuff like that happens, I give up. And I don't have patience with myself. And I think that's something I really need to work on. I've said it before. I'm pretty patient with other people.
Sure.
But when it comes to myself, especially using these two left hands, I don't have it at all. But I am working on it. Like, I've never been one to cook food. And this week I've cooked a few meals, just following a recipe and, you know, seeing what happens. And my wife said it was good. So, I mean, that's the critic I was hoping to impress. So
correct.
Yeah. But like I said, if I can't envision it, I tend to shut down, and that's something I need to work on.
I really tend to look at a lot of things as problems, and I try to figure out how much of my time and effort I need to put into those to solve them, and if it's worth that time and effort that I need to put into it. So, for example, like, I think about things like my health, you know, like I've got this rheumatoid arthritis diagnosis, and it's really changed my life. And when I first was going through it, I really fought against the idea of having an illness, like in one of these unseen type illnesses where you look like you're fine, but not all the time are you fine. And trying to figure out ways to kind of hammer through that without taking a lot of medication and without becoming overly reliant on other people to be able to help me. And I think that idea of sticking with it when it comes to your health, you really don't have much choice. It's either kind of get busy trying to figure out some ways around things and feel better, or don't. And I think for a long time, I got so depressed about it that I really kind of let myself go. You know, I wasn't working out. I wasn't taking great care of myself. I was, you know, overeating and taking a lot of you know, solace and pleasure in food and, you know, drinking one too many beers, you know, sometimes and whatnot. And so I was sharing with you before we got on today that I've really tried to engage in walking this summer. And you've really inspired me to do that. And other people have as well. But, you know, just getting in motion and kind of working through some of that instead of, you know, putting my headphones on and sitting on the couch and listening to a podcast, go out and walk 5,000 steps and add a little bit of movement to your day mm-hmm. and see if you feel better. And what I've noticed for myself is that not only does my body feel better, I think my mood is also improved. And I think my family would probably say the same thing. And so I think for different things, it kind of depends. Like if you were to ask me to replace a heating element on my stove, I'm not even going to begin to try to do that because I'm going to look at that and I'm going to say, I'm going to take this apart. I'm probably going to break it. And then I'll have to call a real repairman in anyway. I might as well just save myself the time and get somebody who knows how to fix it in here. But if there's things that I'm interested in and interested about learning more about, like, for example, a couple of months ago, I kind of messed around with our dryer, our clothes dryer. And I was super interested in learning how it worked for whatever reason. Now, a year ago, I probably could have cared less and would have just called a repairman. But I was able to kind of fix the problem at least temporarily. I might still need to call one a repairman afterwards, right? Sometime, but was able to kind of do that. And I was kind of proud of myself, you know, it was like, hey, I learned to do something new that I didn't know how to do before this week. And so I think it's always kind of finding that sweet spot, you know, knowing that something's going to be really challenging and you want to try to meet that and do it. Or, you know, do you kind of lay up on that and say, nah, you know, I don't really want to do that. I think our show is a great example of that because, you know, last year we were a three-man group with Torres, and Torres could not continue doing the show with us for family reasons and for things that he has going on. And it would have been really easy for us to just stop doing it. We decided to kind of rebrand it and go ahead with it. And I have no idea if five people are listening to it or 500 people are listening to it, but we're enjoying it and we're getting good feedback from people. And I think that's another great example of kind of sticking with it, not knowing exactly what the results will be.
Yeah. And now I know if my dryer goes down, I can give you a call and you'll give me some tips.
If I get across the border, I might not come back to the States though. I'll come to your house and help you fix it. That wouldn't that be something? Then the next week we're sitting at your in your living room recording with Karen and the kids in the background shaking their heads about who's this old fat guy that's moved into our house, Dad. All right, Dave, enough goofing around. You got any final words of wisdom for our audience this week?
Just the quote of the week. It's from Satchel Paige. It says, "Never let your head hang down. Never give up and sit down and grieve. Find another way."
Boy, he has some great quotes. He was a really, really smart guy. I really enjoyed listening to him talk and reading different things that he said over time. You know, he always said, too, don't look back because it might be gaining on you. All right. Well, Dave, with that, we'll let it go for this week. This is episode 16 of Breakfast with the Beats. This was actually an afternoon Coca-Cola break, water break for me from the beach on a Friday afternoon. We will talk to you next week. And we will be getting ready for the trade deadline. Hopefully by next week, we'll have some trades to be able to discuss on the show. But Dave and I will be back with you next week, in which I will be recording from Wisconsin next week instead of Michigan. We'll be out of town again next weekend. So thank you all for listening. Thanks for participating in the show. We hope that you have a great weekend. Peace and take care of yourself out there.